This episode of Tales from Ostlantis is brought to you by Ostlantis Premium. Don't you just hate having your favorite podcast interrupted by ads like this? Well, dear listener, you're in luck. Because starting at just $3 a month, you can support independent Chicano media and receive ad-free episodes, premium episodes, bonus content, and access to our Discord server. Just visit talesfromostlantis.com and click Go Premium, or follow the link in the show notes. And now, on with the show.
You must excuse me. I've grown quite weary.
This hasn't been easy, I know. But you've learned a lesson. A lesson in honesty. Honesty to yourself and honesty to others. That lesson will stand you in good stead all your life.
I think we've all learned a good lesson. I've always heard that honesty is the best policy. Now I'm catching on to why that's so,
Greetings, dear listeners, and welcome to yet another episode of Tales from Ostlantis. We are your hosts, Curly Tlapoyawa.
And Ruben Arellano Tlacatecat.
How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day out there. We've had a lot of rain lately, but today, the last couple of days, has been chilly, chillier than usual for this time of year in March, mid-March, late March. But it's a nice day, it's a sunny day, and hopefully we can get some more of this beautiful, beautiful weather out here in Dallas. How's New Mexico? How's Albuquerque?
Oh, well, that sounds very nice. It's actually, if you'll notice, I'm wearing a jacket today because It's actually pretty chilly in the house, and I didn't want to turn on the heat while we were recording because I didn't want that background hum screwing up our
background
sound.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'll just throw on a jacket.
Nice.
Plus, you know, I wasn't lucky enough to grow up in a house with a heater. So we had a wood-burning stove. So that's
same here.
Like, I'm kind of used to, you know, just dealing with what you got to deal with. It was always cold in the morning until you got that fire going.
In the summer, my AC was cracking open the window and putting a fan in, blowing that hot air.
Yeah.
But it was air. Like, at least it was something.
Really. It was something like wafting over the sweat of your body, right? Yeah, that was cooling you
down. That's what cooled you down. Exactly.
I know exactly what that was like. Then we moved up and we got a swamp cooler that my dad mounted in the window, right? In the kitchen. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't hooked up to anything. So me, my brother, and my sister would take turns, and one of us would have to go outside with the hose and just like stand outside sweating your ass off in this summer heat, just hosing down the pads on the side of the swamp cooler, just so it would stay cool inside for a little bit.
Inside,
and then you'd run in, and then as soon as it started warming up, you'd be, all right, it's your turn.
Taking turns. Damn.
The good old
now
days.
We had here in Texas, at least in this part of Texas, we had the luxury of having, once we did get window units, these are your typical AC, you know, Freon cooled units, so we didn't have to do all that. Like when I was in El Paso back in when I taught there for a year as a visiting professor at UTEP, since it's, you know, El Paso is kind of right there, it's next to New Mexico, so like they adopt a lot of the things that come from New Mexico. And so most of the people there also have swamp coolers. I think maybe a few people now might have, you know, ACs that run with coolant, but it's mainly all. And I was a little surprised because I had no idea what that was until I went out there and like, what is this swamp cooler stuff? Never heard of it.
I remember.
Yep.
I remember.
No. So speaking of hot, have you seen any hot movies lately?
Well, yes, sir, I have. Glad to announce that as of yesterday, the Casagrandes movie was like number 3 in the world on Netflix.
Outstanding, man. That's congratulations.
Thank
to you.
Thank you.
Puga and the whole crew.
Yeah, Miguel Puga, the director, fantastic work. Lalo Alcaraz worked on it.
Right.
Just a lot of great talent was brought in, and you know, when we saw how well it was doing, Puga sent out this text to everybody that said, our little Chicanita has wings. So
right on.
So it's awesome. Feels really good.
Yeah, we watched it, man. It was great, man. I loved it. You know, yeah.
Yeah, I was.
I wish we'd had stuff like this when I was growing up. You know, even when my daughter was small. You know, she's 17 now, and so she sat there. She kind of muscled through it because you know how teens are. Yeah, like, oh yeah. My God, I'm sitting here. But she enjoyed it. You know, for the most part, she also appreciated the fact that it spoke to her on a cultural level. So that was really good.
Yeah, I'm really proud of it. And word on the street is we've got more work coming.
Nice.
So, you know, as long as people watch it and support it, then it shows the powers that be that there is an audience for this kind of material, for these kind of stories, and that are being told in a meaningful way by people themselves, right? Like we're telling our own stories and it's appealing, not just to our own people, but throughout the world, obviously. I mean, it was number 3 in the world. So it's got mass appeal and, it's just showing like brown people can carry a movie.
Nice. Well, again, like I said, congratulations to you and everyone. And so we hope to see more of that in the future.
Thanks, man. It means a lot. I was very happy. So we've got this eclipse coming up.
Right.
And some pretty interesting perspectives.
Now, is the eclipse going to be significant over in your part of the world? Because I know like here, and at least in Dallas and you know, it's gonna run kind of like in a diagonal fashion from like southwest Texas through central Texas up through northeast Texas where I am at, and so Dallas is kind of like riding the path of totality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I'm not sure like to what extent, like to what percentage the upcoming eclipse is going to be over in like the percentage over in New Mexico and your part of the
I mean it doesn't really state. You know, pass over us. I'm looking at a map right now. It says we'll have like in Albuquerque 70 to 80%. Which is still pretty high.
Yeah, it is. It is pretty high.
And then it wow. You know, tapers off the further you get to the in either direction. Horizontally.
Nice.
But yeah.
Yeah, we're going to be in the path of totality. And in fact, I received an email a few days ago from, and I was already planning on giving the students a day off anyway, but they sent an email that because we're going to have a high volume of visitors coming into, you know, certain parts of the state, Dallas is one of those, you know, because of DFW, we have people coming in from all over mm-hmm. the world to witness this thing. And they're saying that perhaps, I know that the ISD, the local school district's going to I know they've already announced that they're not going to be running the buses that day. So wow. Maybe they're kind of giving a hint that maybe they're going to be closing. And so we got the alert as well at Mountain View that perhaps maybe we should take those considerations. So they're not saying we want you to give them the day off, right? So I took a vote in class. I told students who wants to come in on the day of the eclipse and spend some time with your beloved professor, or you want to take the day off and experience this once in a lifetime event. And so by a show of hands, tell me who wants to come in. And like one student kind of like, you know, raised his hand, but not really. He was being a little facetious. I'm like, yeah, I get it. I'm going to give you guys a day off. So
you didn't get that one kid in the front who's like, well, can we get some extra credit work if we want to? And can you assign us some readings? And all the other students are like, man, shut the fuck up.
Right. No, it doesn't get that good. I mean, it gets good, but it don't get that good. So this episode that we're doing was prompted because so a few months ago, a team of artists that go by the name of Point A, and I'm not sure what it stands for, but it's a gentleman and a lady who do a lot of multimedia work and a lot of stuff with technology and sound and stuff. And so they reached out to the Indigenous Cultures Institute, which I'm a part of, and they wanted to see if we would give them an Indigenous perspective on the eclipse, because they're working on a project that's entitled Eclipsing, which is what they call a site-responsive art installation that combines performance, practice, interactivity, sound art, and other media in a public space. So they interviewed various people. That I think they interviewed like a cosmologist or an astronomer, other local artists from the area, you know, people like that. And so they wanted to get also an indigenous perspective, right? And so the ICI passed on the email to me. And so I reached out to him and I was curious. I'm like, that's interesting that you're doing this because, you know, honestly, I hadn't really considered, you know, looking into it. As busy as I am with stuff, one more thing to add to my plate, right? So I was like, let me take a look. Let me see. I can't promise you anything, but let me see what I can find. And so sure enough, I did some digging and also like talked to, you know, several folks. And I was able to cobble up a few things. And so the episode that you're about to hear is basically, it's not exactly what they used in the audio, because they use audio in this sound walk. So what you do is, so they start at the Long Center, which is multimedia plex in Austin. That's right next to what they call Lady Bird Lake, which is, it's really a man-made lake that was created in the middle of downtown Austin, but it's part of the river system that runs through Austin, the Colorado River. And so the Long Center is right next to the river, and they have a set of trails that crisscross across the river, and they go along the side of the riverbank. And so what they did is they did like a 2 mile trek where at various points they had stops. And so what you do is you download this app and you're listening to it through your headphones, and they have paid actors who are part of the whole experience. And as you're walking through the trail, you have people that are kind of talking, you see people arguing, you see people engaging in various activities. And if you go, like, if you look down towards a field, you might see like a group of people doing some choreographic, not a dance, but, you know, like movements and like turns, mm-hmm. and to get your attention. And as this is happening at the same time, you're also listening to the various people that were interviewed, the artists themselves who are, you know, kind of philosophizing and talking about the eclipse and going into existentialism.
That sounds like a total immersive experience.
It is. Right? It is a very immersive experience. And so what they did is they asked me to do because they featured this during the South by Southwest event that just occurred a few weeks ago. And so they invited a few folks before they did the actual launch on the weekend before South by Southwest so that we can get a preview of it. So they did a preview walk. And so we went down there for that. And it's about a 2 mile hike, and it took about an hour and a half or so for the whole thing from start to finish. And it was a very, very unique experience. And so what they did is they interviewed me. And so we did a Zoom for about an hour. And so they used, like, you know how it goes when you're doing these kind of things, you know, like you're going to maybe use 1 or 2 minutes out of the whole thing. But it was cool because they actually, the clips that they used from the Zoom call were things that I think were very important that they caught on during the talk that really added some necessary historical interpretation from an indigenous perspective on eclipses. And so I had actually written out like this whole script that I was going to like hand over to him, but I was like, you know what, maybe I should just hold on to this and maybe we can make an episode out of it. So here we are.
Yeah. Well planned, sir. Like, let me hold off on this. Well, with that being said, oh, and is that,
you know,
is that
they sent an email last week that it was only going on during the South by Southwest event, but they're working with the Long Center to bring it back, hopefully either around the eclipse, and if so, that it's probably going to run through May, but they're going to update us all on the process. Awesome. So if you're in the Austin area in April and possibly through May, make sure you go to the Long Center or you can go to their website and they have more information on there and they give the dates. Right now the dates is still the old dates through March the 12th, So if you are listening to this in late March, early April, just go to the lungcenter.org website and look for the Eclipse project. It's called Eclipsing. And hopefully they'll give us some updates pretty soon on whether or not they're going to be doing this sound walk again.
That's awesome, man. Well, with that being said, let's get into this episode, Eclipse Apocalypse.
When celestial events like an eclipse or a comet occurred, Cuauhtecan people would make special offerings to mark the occasion. These natural phenomena were personified and incorporated into the social, cultural, and spiritual belief system of the community. The phenomena, while infrequent, were not completely misunderstood by native peoples. Cuauhtecans in particular personified them in order to make sense of their meaning. So yes, while these events can be interpreted through a spiritual lens, they were also incorporated as a practical way of making note of these natural occurrences. For many indigenous people, a tension and balance between the spiritual and rational has existed in relation to celestial events. In that sense, these phenomena became stand-ins for characters in the story of creation and life itself. The sun, moon, earth, and stars were embodiments of important ancestors, and in many ceremonies, people in the community would take on the persona of these ancestors, who in turn were themselves avatars of celestial and terrestrial natural phenomena. The people in the community who were selected to be avatars took on the role of the characters in those stories. So it was understood that since the ancestors live and breathe through their avatars, they also had human needs, such as thirst and hunger, and the offerings symbolized that needed sustenance. Typical Cuauhtecan offerings were deer, spring water, and smoke from embers of a ceremonial fire. Other items included corn, beans, squash, pecans, mesquite beans, and deer or rabbit. One thing to keep in mind is that celestial phenomena can be predicted when studied long enough, especially over generations. And that was true of many, if not all, indigenous people. One of the things that is fascinating about our ancestors was their ability to predict eclipses using planetary observation. For instance, in the case of eclipses,
oral history states that an eclipse occurs when the sun and the moon, the primordial ancestors, meet to reaffirm their promise to the people that they will never be alone in their spiritual journey. Even though they must separate, they promise to meet again during the next eclipse. It is said that the ancestors made a promise to the people that nothing would harm the people as long as the two travel through the sky and that everything would be good for the people. The sun and the moon promised to lead the way for eternity, and their meeting, or eclipse, is the renewal of that covenant that they share with us on earth.
The duty of the people in this covenant was to build a ceremonial fire and make offerings which consisted of food, water, and incense, such as sweetgrass, tobacco, and cedar. The point was to direct the smoke from the fire towards the eclipse as a way to demonstrate to the ancestors, which were personified by the sun and the moon, that they were still carrying on the traditions and ways of the people and that they were thankful for keeping their promises. The devotion to these traditions, as with any generation, always varies, and the most devout and ardent keepers of the old ways might engage in a little bit of bloodletting and offer it to the fire as a sign of the utmost respect they have to the personified ancestors. The maintenance of the tradition was a collective affair, but it was the elders, the leaders of the bands, clans, and tribes, as well as the medicine people, the healers, who were the main people responsible for making sure that the rituals were carried out and passed on to the next generation. Today, these ways are still observed by traditional members of the various Cuauhtecan communities and other native peoples of Texas, but they have changed to accommodate the centuries of forced adaptation as well as through the natural progression of cultural evolution. Therefore, not all Texas Indians today might be following the same path from one community to the next, and that's perfectly fine. But most importantly, the thing to remember here is that each and every one of these observances is both equally indigenous and equally valid. In general, the significance of eclipses for native peoples of Texas varied greatly depending on the specific tribe or community. There's no single unified belief across the diverse array of cultures throughout the state. However, we can explore some general themes and examples. Let's look at some of the spiritual and symbolic points of importance.
Point one. Eclipses were a symbol of renewal and rebirth, and some tribes, like the Karankawa, viewed them as a time of renewal and rebirth. They believed the sun was being consumed and reborn, signifying a fresh start for the world. Point two. Another interpretation is that of balance and harmony. Many tribes viewed eclipses as disruptions to the natural order, representing imbalances or conflicts in the cosmos. To restore balance and prevent further cosmic disharmony, certain rituals were performed. These included singing, dancing, or praying in a ceremonial setting. Point three. And of course, there's also the oral historical aspect to natural phenomena. For instance, some Caddo peoples had a tale of a celestial bear trying to devour the sun, with the eclipse representing its struggle. This metaphor can only be understood through a cultural lens, but it generally represented a form of renewal.
So again, it depends on who you ask and their specific traditional understanding. There are also some cultural observances and practices associated with eclipses that might be more familiar due to their shared similarities with cultures around the world.
One, there was a sense of respectful avoidance of eclipses. While some societies actively engaged with them through rituals, others believed it was disrespectful or dangerous to witness eclipses directly. The Comanche, for instance, might stay indoors and cover their mirrors during an eclipse. Two, and if you're trying to avoid the phenomena, your culture might engage in noise-making rituals. Certain tribes, like the Apache, might beat drums and shout to scare away the celestial creature believed to be attacking the sun or moon. Others, like the Wichita, might perform ceremonial dances or offer prayers for the return of light. Three, and just as any other culture around the world might have interpreted this celestial occurrence, eclipses symbolized predictions and omens. They could also serve as prophetic signs which foretold future events or indicated some impending danger. These in turn would be explained through the duration of the eclipse or the color of the obscured sun.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Have you picked up your Mexica calendar for the year 12 Flint? Or how about a paperback copy of The Four Disagreements? Just visit talesfromaztlantis.com for all the latest merchandise and show some love for your favorite podcast. That's talesfromaztlantis.com for all the latest merchandise. Now, back to the show.
What's important here is that indigenous Americans were no different than any other human culture. Their observations of the natural world would be informed by their environment and cultural understanding. It's also useful to remember that a lot of the knowledge of the cosmos was inherited from previous generations through time and space, going back to the dawn of humanity. By the time indigenous Americans are making their observations, celestial movements could be done with precise accuracy, depending on the maintenance of those knowledges by any given group at any given moment. Now, Cuauhtecan people in particular, our understanding of eclipses is a bit fractured, but we do know a few of the old rituals as previously described. This fragmentation is primarily due to several factors, such as historical disruptions, lack of written records, and conflicting interpretations by Europeans who described them.
Historical disruptions. The Coahuiltecans, who inhabited Coahuila and parts of Texas and northern Mexico, faced immense pressure and displacement during the colonial period. Many of their oral traditions and cultural practices have been lost or fragmented. Lack of written records. The Coahuiltecans lacked a written language, making it difficult to directly access their perspectives on celestial phenomena like eclipses. Most information comes from secondary sources such as Spanish missionary accounts, which can be filtered through colonial biases. Conflicting interpretations. Even with missionary accounts, interpretations of Coahuiltecan beliefs about eclipses can be challenging. Different missionaries might document seemingly conflicting narratives, reflecting either variations in Coahuiltecan traditions or limitations in understanding and translation.
But despite these limitations, we do understand the significance of eclipses for some Coahuiltecan groups. These include the reenactment ceremony of the primordial deities, the sun and the moon, and the role of the medicine people during the event, as was previously described. Coahuiltecan peoples revered celestial bodies, particularly the sun and the moon, as powerful deities. The eclipse was interpreted as the keeping of cultural continuity through the metaphorical promise made by the personified ancestors. This tradition was kept by the medicine people who were responsible for preparing ahead of time and for conducting the rituals. They played a crucial role in mediating relationships with the spirit world and celestial forces, and they performed specific ceremonial rituals during eclipses to maintain a cosmic balance. And as a historian, I also like the added dimension that often gets overlooked in discussions about indigenous rituals related to cosmological events. That is, that the rituals and ceremonies not only served spiritual and cultural purposes, but that they were also a way of reminding the people that these things happen from time to time. So in reality, people weren't really that surprised when an eclipse occurred, because it was already an integral part of the oral history that was passed down from one generation to the next.
That's really cool. I like the personifications, right? In Mexica tradition, there's something very similar called the Ixiptla or the Teoixiptla, and that means literally the representation, or some people gloss it as the impersonator or the sacred impersonator. But these were people who would participate in ceremony and, you know, take on the part of a teteo for the purpose of that ceremony. So it seems like there's some crossover there.
Are these the ones that were made with, I'm trying to remember, was it amaranth or was it something else?
Yeah, so there were different types of Ixiptla, right? There were human Ixiptla, like an individual would, you know, for the sake of this ceremony, you are Tlaloc or you are Tezcatlipoca. And then in other times of the year, depending on the importance of the ceremony, there would be Ixiptla made out of amaranth, which would be, you know, baked into these big cakes, and then they would be consumed
right
at the end of the ceremony. And then you would also see Ixiptla made out of paper. And in the Huasteca, they continue that tradition to this day. They have the paper that they cut out into the shape of the teteo and use them as representations of the teteo for their ceremonies. So that's all really cool. I like that you talked about the different approaches that indigenous people have towards eclipses, because when you only hear one approach or one view, it kind of colors your perception as like, oh, all natives think this way about it.
But right,
it's like you said, for some, it's like it's about harmony and tradition. But for other, like for the Mexica, it was definitely like they saw the sun was being under attack.
Was it like doom and gloom for the Mexica? Is that what I'm hearing from you?
Yeah. I mean, it was some time where it was like, you know, definitely a time for concern because the idea was that a jaguar, well, there's two two versions of it. In one, either a jaguar is trying to consume the sun.
Interesting.
Which I think stretches across a lot of cultures, this idea. Because I know in China, it's a dragon trying to consume the sun. And then you had mentioned a bear.
The bear, yeah.
The bear consuming the sun. And the response with the Mexica and the Chinese was similar in that you would make a lot of noise.
Right.
And sing and have ceremony and do all this loud noisemaking because you're trying to scare away the jaguar, right?
Yeah.
And then the other version of it or view of the eclipse is that the sun is being attacked by the tzimik, tzimime, right? Who they call them the star demons.
And right. Yes,
before y'all write in angrily, I know we didn't have demons and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, that the you know, when you have the total eclipse, you could sometimes see stars on the periphery of the sun. And that those were viewed as like, well, those are the tzitzimime that are attacking the sun.
Interesting.
And that if you went outside, especially if you were a man, that they could possess you.
Oh, wow.
And take you over. Yeah. So it's pretty cool. If you look up tzitzimit on Google or whatever in the codices, the way they're depicted is pretty horrifying.
Does this tie in to the Nahuales somehow? The tradition of the shapeshifter?
I don't think so. I think it's a separate tradition because the tzitzimime were associated with the siwateteo, right? Mm-hmm. Which were like the sacred women. And with coatlicue, sitlalicue, and siwakoat. So it's very strong feminine energy, right? Like the female representations of the teteo.
Mm.
And that the leader of the tzitzime were Itzpapalotl.
Mm.
So when you see images of Itzpapalotl, she bears those representations of the tzitzimitl, which is they're like skeletal creatures, and on their joints or the points of articulation are star symbols, like connecting themselves into one being, and that they have serpents usually crawling out of their nether regions, and they look horrific. They're pretty badass.
Two things stand out from your description. One, first of all, is it similar to the way that the Virgin of Guadalupe is kind of depicted with stars on her cloak, in a sense?
Interesting, right? Well,
and are the stars are five-point stars, or what kind of stars are they?
Well, they're the Mesoamerican, the Mexica depiction of the stars. So they look like Pokemon balls, right? Where they're the circles with the little dot in the middle, and they're half red.
Oh, right. Yes.
Half white.
Yes,
yes. So it's that style of star, and they're actually parts of their body, of their skeletal frame. So they're not wearing like clothing, and then the stars are on the clothing. Like the stars are them. Like they are the stars. I love how, because I go on these tours. Like when I was working at Chaco, at night we went on this tour, the starlight tour of Pueblo Bonito, and so all these archaeologists head out there, and the tour guide's leading us through, and the story is so quaint and beautiful. It's a beautiful story. But it's a Pueblo story of, you know, the stars and the moon, and it's very cool, right? The coyote trickster and, you know, the grandmother and all of this. Meanwhile, the Mexica story is like so violent, and it's like, and then he, you know, killed his 400 brothers and cast them across the sky, and they became stars. Right.
Because, you know, those Mexica were just a bunch of violent individuals.
Well, we like to fight. We like to throw down. And But one of my favorite depictions of an eclipse is in the Teleriano Remensis. And I think it's folio 40V, and it's up in the upper right-hand corner is an image representing an eclipse of the sun.
What's the image?
It's like the so you could see the land. There's like a symbol for the land, and then there's, because this was a post-conquest document, the image of the sun, I mean, of the moon is like a that crescent, the crescent moon.
Yeah.
But it's like rising up in front of the Mexica symbol of the sun. So It's like, it was almost, you know, if you think of it this way from perspective, right? Like you're standing on the earth and you're looking up and you're seeing the moon In front of the sun. So It showed a pretty advanced understanding of what was happening at that moment, you know? So
it kind of reminded me of those ceramic, I'm not sure what they're called, but like these things that kind of like show the moon and the sun kind of together, like interlocking. There you go. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact,
is it kind of like that?
Yeah. In fact, we use that image in the Casa Grandes movie as like a transition between scenes.
Yeah, that's what reminded me of.
I was very proud of that moment. There's a lot of stuff in the movie that I'm very proud of.
Was Casa Grande alluding to the upcoming eclipse in that?
We were making a prophecy, yes.
Yeah. The prophecies are coming true.
The prophecies are coming true. We're number three in the world. Well, one of my, speaking of prophecies, you know, let's bring it into the modern era, because
everybody's favorite subject, prophecy.
Prophecies.
Especially if it's end time.
Yeah, right. So, you know, we covered traditional indigenous perspectives of the of an eclipse. And I know one thing that, you know, Eurocentric folks on the right like to do is kind of belittle indigenous perspectives and say, oh, they were so superstitious and this and that, and that's why they needed Jesus, right? So I thought, you know, I would look into some current perspectives coming from our Christian friends about the upcoming eclipse. And boy howdy, if this shit comes to pass, we're in trouble, my friend, because apparently this eclipse, according to folks like Alex Jones, for example, this eclipse is going to be used as an event by the New World Order. They're going to capitalize on the eclipse, and the Department of Homeland Security, for some reason, is going to use it as a way to instill, like, take our guns or something. I don't know. They didn't really get into it. He's very vague on the particulars, but I thought it would be fun to play some audio, and this is from a video that our friend of the show, Alex Jones,
friend of the show,
played on his show. So check this out, my friend.
Confronted by a new world order and a U.S. president that is carrying out their silent war, we are living in a time of reckoning, and through signs, God is speaking directly to those with ears to listen.
In Genesis 1:14, God declared the sun and the moon were for signs.
Right.
The only signs they can give is eclipses. All right?
And the that's not the only signs.
No false prophet can manipulate it. Solar eclipse means judgment is coming upon a nation. Since we become a nation in 1776, there has only been 8 total solar eclipses that have completely crossed the United States. Two of them occurred during the Revolutionary War. 3 of them occurred during the Civil War.
Of course.
2 of them occurred during the Vietnam War. Of those 8, only one, which was the one 7 years ago, it only crossed the United States and no other country.
Oh, my gosh. What's up with this guy's voice? Mm-hmm. And first of all I'm getting out of this is that the United States is always at war. So I'm not sure what message he's trying to put out there, other than the fact that we're always at war, it seems. So this next one comes from TikTok, and I'm not going to give the TikTok user's name because I don't want to promote any of the nonsense that they're pushing. They don't need any more listeners than they already have, believe me. And this guy is obsessed with the fact that the path of the eclipse is going to cross over towns named Nineveh or Nineveh or whatever. I don't really care. I think it's Nineveh. But that somehow this relates to a story of Jonah and, you know, a prophecy in the Bible. It's just pure nonsense. And given the Christianity, you know, pushed in this country, it's hardly any surprise that there would be biblically named towns in the United States. So this is nothing interesting. It's nothing unique. It's a coincidence. It's a strange coincidence, I guess, if you're looking for dots to connect. But check this guy out. This the level of fear-mongering that they're trying to spread by using the eclipse is pretty interesting. Check him out.
Did you know that the solar eclipse happening on April 8th is a lot more crucial than you think? Jesus spoke about Matthew that this evil, adulterous generation seeks for a sign, but no sign shall be given to it except for the sign that happened in the days of the prophet Jonah. In Luke, it says, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be as the coming of the Son of Man.
Well, there you
have
it.
But you will not believe the path of the solar eclipse will take.
The hell you say.
It'll cross over several towns named Nineveh,
no,
and even Rapture, Indiana.
Get
but that's
out.
Not even the crazy part.
It isn't?
Also goes over the Ark, and it'll happen under the constellation Cetus, which
Whoa.
Means whale, which is what swallowed up Jonah. Subscribe right now.
No, I don't think we'll subscribe. Well, holy shit. That's some fascinating information there, Professor. And now, according to this next guy, the eclipse is a sign that we are going to experience massive natural catastrophes. So calamities are on their way, according to this next individual. And I believe this guy's from TikTok also. So let's give his prophecies a listen.
Stop and listen.
Stop what you're doing.
Things about the eclipse that
this guy's about to ruin.
No, I'm not going to talk about how it forms the Ilah for the Tav or how it goes through all the cities of Nineveh.
Thank goodness.
I'm going to talk about something in our past.
Uh-oh.
Did you know that in 1811, we had a solar eclipse that was preceded 2 weeks earlier by a partial lunar eclipse? This is the second solar eclipse that we had in the early 1800s. The reason this is important is because...
What's up with the Michael Myers-style Halloween music? Did John Carpenter score this guy's TikTok account?
Followed by 6,000 to 10,000 in the Boothfield of Missouri, where the New Madrid fault line is. You should pause and read this because you'll see that we had some as strong as 8.8 in the series following the solar eclipse. Here's where it starts to get interesting. It
Finally,
the Mississippi River ran backwards for 3 hours, as well as many other earthquake phenomena. I bet you didn't hear about that in history class.
Stay with me
because this
that.
Is where it gets interesting. There was sand boils, seismic.
I thought it was going to get interesting before.
Earthquake lights, earthquake smog, thunder, and animal warnings. I suggest you pause and read those to see what was going on. What's really interesting is the earthquake smog. It says the skies turned dark during the earthquakes, so dark that the lighted lamps didn't help, and the air smelled bad, and that it was hard to breathe. I suggest you just pause and read some of the scriptures that I put here before continuing on, because I'm trying to make this as short as possible.
Well, you failed in making it as short as possible. So the idea is this: the path is going to pass over towns named Nineveh. And apparently this is a big deal because Jonah was told to go convert Christians and he went to a town called Nineveh and that an eclipse happened and that's what caused all the people in the town to convert. And somehow this is translates to some prophecy of like mass conversion of people, like the eclipse is going to cause this mass conversion of people to Jesus. But then this other guy says, in another clip that it's going to just cause like mass global disaster, environmental disaster, earthquakes, fucking dogs and cats living
right.
together.
I was just thinking that.
Mass hysteria.
I'm like, who are you going to call, man?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to go out on a limb here, my friend. We're recording this episode before the actual eclipse. Mm-hmm. So we don't know if any of these prophecies are actually going to happen. But I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say that everything's going to be okay. I don't think we're going to see, you know, one, a mass conversion to Christianity because of the path, crossing over towns named Mibova. And I don't think we're going to see, you know, civil unrest. And I don't think we're going to see mass earthquakes or anything. I think what's going to happen is families are going to go out and they're going to put on their glasses and they're going to look up and they're going to be able to enjoy something that our ancestors, that humanity's ancestors have witnessed for millennia. And, you know, just take that in. And what's interesting though is I saw on Newsweek, I think it was Newsweek, they put out this story how in Oklahoma, because I guess Oklahoma is like right in the path. Yeah. That they're calling out the National Guard to sort of help with crowd control because they're expecting so many freaking people to show up
right.
to watch this event that they need some sort of, you know, they lack the infrastructure basically to accommodate the numbers of people that they're expecting. Yeah. So they're calling up, you know, National Guard to help with crowd control, basically.
Wow.
And so, of course, the conspiracy theorists are going through the roof with right. this. You know, what's going to happen? What are they going to do?
The government's involved, the military's involved, and anything that is meant to actually help, these people always twist it around and make it some kind of nefarious affair, right? Like, what is the federal government up to? Are they going to, like, Mr. Jones here, like back in the day, like one of the things that he was famous for incorrectly prophesying was that the federal government was going to have these detention centers throughout the state of Texas. Oh. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I remember.
Right.
Yeah, I remember that.
Post 9/11, you know, when he just went off the rails and it's like, dude, please bring it back. Tone it down a bit. It's going to be all right. Like Zap from Zap and Roger used to say, it's all right. It's going to be all right, man. Don't worry about it.
Well, the problem with people like Jones and his listeners and the people making these bizarre TikTok, you know, videos claiming that the world's going to end or that some great cataclysm is coming is they just don't like the truth. That's their problem. They're allergic to the truth, I like to say.
Yeah. And what is it about the truth that they're allergic to?
Well, it's because the truth is like medicine.
So they're allergic to medicine.
They are allergic to medicine. It's interesting. It's quite the phenomenon amongst conspiracists.
But you know what's funny? Like, within medicine people, they understood the eclipse. So there's a connection there.
Hey, now.
They understood the truth.
That's because they understood the truth, and they were medicine, and they knew it doesn't always taste good.
That's true.
But it is always good for you.
Always. Remember that, folks. Have a safe eclipse watching out there, everyone.
Yes, absolutely. And if the world still exists after this episode airs, please tune in again, because we love having you.
Right on.
Dimoitase.
Wacha.
I'm telling you right now, something is not right about this eclipse. This is the path that it will take, and it will cross over with the eclipse that we had in 2017, making an X on the country. Now, right there in the crosshairs, right there, is a town called Maconda, Illinois. Let's talk about it. So this is a better look at the direct path of totality that the solar eclipse will take. Right there by Carbondale, where the X meets, is Makonda. Just as a fun fact for shiggles, this has never happened in the United States. We have never had two solar eclipse paths cross over on one town. So this is a pretty big fucking deal. Makonda really isn't that big of a deal. It has a population of like 500 people, and it's known as a hippie town in Illinois. Now, what I did find interesting is that there is a giant city-state park inside of Makonda. Are we waking up giants? Now, Makonda, translated to South African, it means little ones. Are we the little ones, and they're the big ones coming when the eclipse happens? Now, maybe I'm wilding out. Maybe I'm tripping. Maybe there's nothing to this. But if I am just wilding out and there is nothing to this, why have they already predicted a historical chance of cloud coverage on the day of the solar eclipse? Since when do they predict cloud coverage 2 months in advance? That shit is suspicious. The fact that this hasn't ever happened before is suspicious. The fact that there is a giant city-state park right outside Suwannee National Forest, which is known for Bigfoot sightings, is suspicious. So are the clouds a attempt to hide the eclipse from us so that we don't see what happens in the shadows?
Thank you for listening to Tales from Aztlantis, a project of the Chimali Institute of Mesoamerican Arts. If you enjoy the show, please consider becoming a Patreon supporter. You can do this by visiting talesfromaztlantis.com and clicking Support the Podcast. Your continued support will help keep the podcast ad-free and independent. Until next time, Timo Itase.